Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, kind of. Joe Heschmeyer is going to host for me today because we have a very special guest. Joe will tell you about our special guest. Thanks so much for being with us. You can call if you want to talk to our special guest, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer, longtime apologist, the proprietor and inventor of Shameless Popery on the internet, also the newest addition to the Catholic Answers family here, and we're just delighted to have him. Joe, thank you for guest hosting for us today.
Yeah, so you may be wondering why I'm guest hosting rather than just being the guest, and that's because our special guest today, many of you may know from listening to shows such as Catholic Answers Live or the intro a minute ago, a guy by the name of Cy Kellett. Cy, thanks for coming on your show.
Thank you for having me, Joe. I really appreciate you having me on as your guest today.
Yeah, so we won't banter too much because we know you want to get down to the meat of what we're here for.
No jibber jabber today.
Exactly.
Please,
no jibber jabber per the request of members of the audience.
Exactly.
So, Cy, why are you here not as a guest?
Well, Joe, today we mark the release of my brand new book, A Teacher of Strange Things: Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. Available wherever you get your books, and ask for it at your Catholic bookstore if they don't have it, because they'd be happy to help you, and we want you to support your local Catholic bookstore. It's very exciting to me. I have never published a nonfiction book before. I have never published a book with Catholic Answers Press, and it's just a super big, huge day for me.
So it's pretty easy to remember the title. You just think, okay, Cy is a strange teacher of things, and he's written a book called A Teacher of Strange Things.
Joe, don't be too good at this. Come on now. I want to keep my day job. Yes, that's very good. That's an excellent point. A Teacher of Strange Things. Yep.
Well, everyone, you should buy the book so that if Cy loses his day job, he has a great source of supplemental income.
Oh, I like it, Joe.
All right. So, Cy, in all seriousness, tell us. So the subtitle of the book is Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him.
Yeah.
So let's start with that first question, who Jesus was and what that has to do with being a teacher of strange things.
Well, because the strangest thing, well, I mean, I don't want to say which is the strangest because, I mean, there's the teaching on the Eucharist and there's the teaching on his own cross as salvific, and there's many strange things that he teaches, but among them, and probably the organizing principle that gives all of them their strangeness, is his own identity, is who he is. And he is not shy about sharing that. He's careful about sharing it because he has a plan, and that plan involves 3 years of ministry, or the Father, I should say, has the plan, but it involves 3 years of ministry. It involves calling people like Peter and all the other apostles and disciples and forming a church. And so he needs time to do that. So he's not, he doesn't just show up on the scene and go, I'm God, because that would make about a one-day ministry in the ancient world.
Would be a shorter New Testament.
It would be a much shorter New Testament. But he makes no, he does not quibble about the fact that he is God. He clearly teaches it. And that is a very strange teaching, and one that I don't think enough Christians are shocked by and even disturbed by, because it should be something that disturbs your peace. Well, how is this? How is it that this man is God? And we should, I don't think disturb your peace is the right, but at least disturb your intellect so that you explore this very strange mystery of his identity.
Yeah, so I'm grateful to say this is a disturbing book.
Oh, thank you.
Is that because
of spelling errors or because?
It's easy to have a sort of almost inoculation to the gospel.
Exactly.
You've gotten just enough that it sounds like, oh, well, I've heard that before. I know how that goes before.
Right.
And what I like about this book is that you kind of shake us out of that stupor.
I hope so, Joe. Thank you for saying that. I hope that is my goal, is to get past just exactly that thing that you were talking about, that we're inoculated to the gospel because it becomes old hat and everyday for us.
Yeah, G.K. Chesterton suggested that the person other than the Christian most equipped to explain Christianity would be the person who heard it for the first time. That the worst person to comment on Christianity is the one who sort of feels like they know everything about it and has never really tried it and has never really gone deep in it and has just gotten a few tastes and then given up.
Right.
It's like having Olive Garden and deciding that you don't like Italian food.
Well, I love Olive Garden and Italian food. I love them both.
Wonderful.
But I like salt. So Olive Garden is a very good place for me. I think, well, first of all, this is the G.K. Chesterton studio. So I'm glad that you quoted Chesterton, but I want to, if I may, tell you a little story that I used to be a newspaper editor, a Catholic newspaper editor, and I got to do an interview with a man who was a real missionary in Africa. He came from West Africa. He was a West African man himself, became a Catholic priest, he became a Catholic bishop, but his job as a Catholic bishop was to go out, like, literally, he would go out on a donkey. Like, he would go to places where there's no roads and tell people about the Christian faith. And he said to me in the course of this interview and our conversation, he said, in America, you have no idea what that is like because your society is Christianized. You don't know that it's Christianized because it's so Christian. But he said, when I go out and share the gospel, people are astounded by it. And he also told me, and I always like to add this, he said, the first people who accept it are women. He said, because I tell them God created everyone equal and he wants to save everyone but through the life of his son Jesus. And they go, he said, the women would be like, everyone's equal? That's my religion. I'm now a Christian. So we don't even remember that. The basic things, like before Christ, childhood was not understood the way we understand childhood. The relationships between men and women were not understood the same way. So I think you're right that we become kind of inured to the message because it's everyday to us. But as Chesterton said, and as this bishop from Africa taught me, that's the person who's never heard it before that it will tell you just how shocking this message is.
There's something really brilliant about that. I've seen this even in reading some things written by atheists where they're kind of like, well, everyone knows X, Y, and Z when X, Y, and Z are only things about the moral life that a Christian society kind of knows. Exactly. You know, like the way we treat the people who are weaker than us or the way we treat you know, the sensitivity we have as a culture to people who are in a powerless position or who are disenfranchised or disempowered in any way, that is not a pagan virtue. You know, whatever debate we may have about how we do that in society, we should at least reflect that that's coming out of a Christian climb.
Exactly. I mean, the pagans knew how shocking this was, this Jesus thing, and they experienced it as a shock. It annoyed them that Christians wouldn't go to the gladiatorial games. And I mean, I'm not talking about a persecution of Christians or anything. I'm just talking about the fact that their pagan neighbors were annoyed by the fact that they would say, no, I can't go to that. I can't go watch people be killed. Because as some of the early Christian teachers said, if I go and watch that, I'm participating in it, and I won't because I belong to Christ now. The pagans knew this is a very odd group of people, these Christians.
So I understand you have your own maybe secret motive in writing this, and it wasn't just to dissuade people from going to gladiatorial games.
No, I don't think you should go to gladiatorial games.
Can you watch the movie Gladiator?
I have seen it a few times. I did have a secret motive, Joe, and—
Can I ask you about it on the air?
Yeah. No, I want to share the secret of it, and my children don't listen to this program, so I'm safe saying it. That I wanted a book that I could put in the hands of my adult children that they would have to read because their dad wrote it, and now they have to read it, that would try again to introduce them to the person of Jesus, because not all of my grown children are practicing the faith or understand why I practice the faith or believe in it. So this is a book that in my mind as I was writing every word of it was, how can I speak to someone in their 20s who, for whatever reason, is rejecting the Christian faith. And I have a lot of experience with my kids, you know, with the kids who come to my house because of them. You know, now it's young adults come to my house. It was teenagers a few years ago. And many of these young people, they don't know Jesus at all. They do not understand. When they come into my house and see a crucifix on the wall, they don't understand what that is and why that's there. As a matter of fact, I think it might bother some of them a little bit. Others, I have to say, I've met young people who, when they see it, they feel weirdly comforted by it. Like, there's like religion in this house, and they don't have any experience of that. So my secret, you know, there's practical reasons for writing a book about Jesus, which I hope we'll discuss in the hour. But my own, in my own heart, in my inner heart, it was for my kids. I wanted them to read and meet him.
That's really beautiful. I mean, a lot of parents just write really long emails, but you've written an actual book.
Yeah, and it was longer than this because Todd took a lot of it out. He was like, no, you don't need all. That's what editors do.
And I guess it's nice, too, because people who are listening and thinking, oh, man, I wish I'd written something like that for my kids. You can go to shop.catholic.com.
I like you, Joe. I like how you handle this. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll read the ad for today before we go to a break, and then we'll maybe come back. And people are welcome to call 888-318-7884. I know I'm sounding like the host now. Joe is the host, but the guest, if he does this every day, gets to say certain things. 888-318-7884. I would be very happy to talk to you, but I just want to read the ad. Promo code TEACHME. Saves listeners 25% today only at shop.catholic.com. If you're listening now and you'd like to get the book, go to shop.catholic.com, get 25% off by putting in the promo code TEACHME. 888-318-7884, our number. Give us a call. Love to talk with you. Right back with more with Joe Heschmeyer, Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN podcasts are the perfect companion for busy Catholics everywhere. Your favorite EWTN programs are waiting for you to listen to on your time. With on-demand access to audio, you can pause and pick up right where you left off, anytime, anywhere. Just subscribe by using your mobile device's free podcast app. Find old favorites or discover something new. EWTN podcasts, they're waiting for you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, on most days the host of this program, but today I am the guest because Joe Heschmeyer, the newest apologist here at Catholic Answers, has been kind enough to come and be the host and to ask me about my new book, A Teacher of Strange Things, who Jesus was, what he taught, and why people still follow him. And your calls are welcome if you want to talk about Jesus. I'd really like to talk about Jesus this hour, and you got Joe here, so it won't just be me. There'll also be a smart person in on the conversation and a guy who's an expert at this. And I actually think it's important that I'm not an expert. Maybe we can talk about that in a little bit. I'm not an expert in the way that you are, and that has an effect on the way you write a book like this. But 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. If you want to talk about the book, that's fine, or anything else. I would just like to talk with you today. Joe, thank you again for hosting.
Absolutely. So when we last spoke before the break, we talked a little bit, but in the break, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
During that time, we were talking about kind of who this is for in one sense, which is certainly for maybe people who've wandered away from the faith after having been raised in it, and their parents who may be thinking, what would be a good book to get to reawaken them to this?
Yes.
Is it fair to say that's your audience, or who do you have in mind kind of reading this?
Well, that I think the audience is wider than that. That's like my secret audience, okay. You know? But I think that the audience is wider in that for one thing, we here at Catholic Answers, after all these decades here at Catholic Answers, realized, and I'm not the one who realized, I don't want to make it like we did, but folks here, the important people here, realized that there were certain things that we were doing really well, like responding to, say, I don't know, Lutheran arguments or Mormon arguments against the Catholic Church or atheist arguments against God or certain kinds of moral arguments against abortion. But what we hadn't done was provide basic books on certain aspects of the Catholic faith. And so in my own mind, I hope that this book falls in a pattern that's kind of starts with Trent Horn's book, Why We're Catholic. So that's a basic introduction to the Catholic faith and a great one. And I highly recommend it. And then, okay, so what's the next? The Bible. Jimmy does The Bible is a Catholic Book. This is a basic introduction to the Bible. And written by someone who's an expert on that. And so often, you'll probably notice, people who are real high-level experts can write basic introductions really, really well. And that's what Jimmy did. But it's important that we have a basic introduction to the person of Jesus. And we didn't have that. And so that's the idea here. The general idea is to have a basic introduction to the person of Jesus, because there are many Christians who are Christian who are not sure whether they know Jesus. And I'd like, you know, them to get the book and go, oh, I do know Jesus. And this, because they'll see things in the book that are familiar to their own experience and that kind of thing. But, you know, I think a lot of times people have taken Trent's book, Why We're Catholic, and just put it in another person's hands as a way of saying, read this because I want you to meet the Catholic Church. And that's really my hope, is that people will do that with A Teacher of Strange Things, that I really want you to meet Jesus. And so it's not a book with any other agenda than that.
That's really beautiful. I like the idea. You know, I've gotten this question a lot. I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot. And I suspect our listeners have gotten this question a lot, where people will say, what is a good book to give someone about Catholicism? And that is always a really hard question to answer.
Right.
Without knowing who the person is, mm-hmm. how much they know, kind of where their own, like, their faith journey has been. You know, did this person grow up Christian? Did they grow up Hindu? Well, you know, what's their story? Because you don't know how shallow or how deep to give. So if you had to rate yours almost like a mild to spiciness level,
right?
How spicy of a book is it? I guess I should say, how deep is this? How meaty?
Okay, so that's a little bit of, that's a hard question, Joe, because I think, like, in the beginning of the book, the whole introduction of the book is kind of an invitation to almost like a millennial person in a way, the person who has objections to the Catholic view of Jesus. But then throughout the book, I tried to give the traditional view of Jesus, which is the Catholic view and the Orthodox view. It's one that we share in many ways with our Protestant brothers and sisters. But what happened in 1517 is radically different from any other reform movement in the history of the Catholic Church, in that it denied the liturgical side of the life of Christ and of the life of Jesus. And so I didn't try to give a buddy Jesus kind of thing, but to present Jesus as he presented himself and as the apostles presented him, as the founder of a church of sacraments, and a reason for those sacraments. So it's a little bit spicy on that end, because it's not just here's a Jesus that everyone can agree with, because I don't believe in that Jesus that everyone can agree with. There's a specific Jesus. He came in at a certain time and he did certain things. Among them, found a church. It's called the Catholic Church. It's one that has a liturgy. That liturgy is shared by all Christians everywhere through all time until 1517. So this is a liturgical Jesus. This is a hierarchical Jesus. This is a sacramental Jesus. But why is he all of those things? Because he loves us dearly and wants to be with us.
Powerful. Beautiful. Well, should we go to the calls?
I think so. Sure. Yeah, sure. Okay. I gotta
you gotta actually push the buttons.
All right, Joe in Idaho, you are up first. Joe, thank you very much for your call. That's what I meant, John. I said Joe because I'm looking at you, but sorry, John. I like to start off with a mistake whenever I go to the phones on a Monday. John, how are you?
I'm fine, and I'm glad I'm not the only one that makes mistakes.
Oh, no. Well, you're in good company with me, John.
Gentlemen, thank you for everything. My granddaughter asked me two questions, actually, recently, and they don't get a whole lot of faith teaching at home, if any, and so one of the few things I can do is say, her grandma and I say grace when they're here. And so the 7-year-old granddaughter, she said, when I was done, said, Papa, who's Jesus?
Ah.
And her second question was, Papa, what's heaven?
Yeah.
And I didn't think she could understand what our Savior was. So I told her that he was someone that he showed us how to live correctly. And that's not the answer I wanted to give, but I wanted to know what you would have told her.
Well, I suppose you said 7 years old?
7 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
And first of all, I think you're in a position that lots of grandparents are in. And so this might be a book for the kids and for the in-laws, because it's not for a 7-year-old, but I think that the thing I would want to say to the 7-year-old, because what a wonderful opportunity. I mean, the child asked innocently, who is Jesus? I remember a similar thing when my own son, he was 5 years old, and he said, what are the 10 commandments? And I thought, it's so much better if they ask than you know. So you have this wonderful, beautiful moment And it's still open. She still wants to know. I mean, you can go back and this moment can go on for years now, but she opened it. I think what I would say, and Joe, again, you're the expert. I welcome your help. I would say God made each of us. He made you because he loves you. And he sent his son Jesus to come here and be your friend. And he wants to be your friend throughout all of your life so that you can come home at the end of your life, so that you'll know your way home, so that you can come home to the Father God who made you and loves you and wants you in his home forever. And maybe try there, that Jesus as an expression of the love of the Father, I think you can never really go wrong with. And little children need to know that God made them on purpose and loves them. What do you think, John?
No, thank you. I was kind of at a loss when she's becoming aware.
Yeah.
The age of reason. You can see it by the things she talks about. And her other grandma, her maternal grandma, is of faith too. And we just keep praying that we can guide her in the right direction, that the kids, her brother's only 5, and so he's just sitting there looking at us, kind of wanting to know what sis is talking about, you
right,
know?
Right.
No questions out of him yet. But I didn't feel like I answered her well enough. You can see the little wheels are turning when you say
yeah.
things like that, and you're just
right.
praying that you stay, just like you said, plant the seed so she asks more questions.
Yeah, but I think you're missing something really important. She saw you pray. She saw her grandfather pray, and that means that God is something great and wonderful if her grandfather was praying. So the door opens because she sees that. And I don't think you should berate yourself at all. That door is open because she saw you pray. So in time, make sure she knows that God loves her and that he sent Jesus because he wants her to have his friendship on earth. He wants her to have God as his friend, and that's what Jesus is, God as our friend. Now, a lot of people don't like to talk about Jesus as our friend, but Jesus talked about Jesus as our friend. People think you're selling the gospel short or something when you say, well, read the gospel. It's what he calls himself, our friend. And friendship with God is the greatest thing that can happen to you. So I would just keep being positive that way about how much God loves her and that the whole point of Jesus' life is so that she and everyone else will have a friend here that who knows God and is God.
What do you think of that, John?
Thank you. I love your response to bring the Father and the Son into that, just a small, quick answer
yeah.
that a 7-year-old can grasp.
Right.
That God loves us and he sent his Son to show how he loves us.
Amen. Amen, brother. I don't know. What do you think, Joe?
You know, I might add one thing. And then, John, after this, if you would stay on the line, we will get you a copy of a book called A Teacher of Strange Things by Cy Kellett, our normal host and today's guest.
Not normal.
Well, good point. Our strange, strange host and teacher, host of a strange show, Cy
yeah.
Kellett. But yeah, I think you guys have already hit on this, but I just want to emphasize maybe 2 points. One is, the Our Father is given because the disciples see Jesus praying and they see teach us how to pray. So we don't pray so that we can be seen by men. And, you know, Jesus warns against that. But there is this real sense in which if you're not afraid to be seen praying, if you're not going to like hide the light under a bushel basket, as it were, that is a powerful witness. That's the first thing. And the second one is, so often these moments come up and we feel totally unprepared for them. And I think it's one of the reasons why this book and books like it are really good. But we should also remember that it's okay to maybe not have it perfect, right? Like you can have what the French call the spirit of the stairs, where you walk away and think, I should have said that differently. And then the next time you see them, you say, you know what? I was thinking about the question you asked last time. And whether you're talking to a kid or an adult, that means so much because it's a way of saying your questions matter
yeah.
to me. Like your thoughts matter to me. And that it's not just a offhanded sort of half thought out response, that you're coming back to them. And that door has been open, like you said. And when you go back through and say, hey, I've been thinking about your question, you better believe a 7-year-old wants to hear, like, the question I asked made an adult, not just any adult, my grandpa, stop and think and wonder how he should say it. He came back to it with, you know, with more intentionality. Yeah. Like,
beautiful, Joe. Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful thing. So, John, thank you so much for calling in, and I hope you enjoy the book.
And don't hang up because they're going to send you the book. Yeah, hang on for a quick sec, John. I'll put you on hold, as a matter of fact, so I won't hang up on you by accident. Our guest is me, our host today, Joe Heschmeyer, the newest apologist here at Catholic Answers. The name of the new book is A Teacher of Strange Things: Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. I assume you will have more questions for me, Joe.
I do have some more questions for you.
All right. Well, we're going to have to take a break in a few seconds. But if you want to call with your questions, you are welcome as well. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. It's a strange day at Catholic Answers Live. We got a strange guest, and we're talking about a strange book. Your strange questions, welcome. 888-318-7884.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
According to divine command, we should give God worship, but how do we know if we're doing it right? Is worship a form of self-help? To make me feel better? A form of social activism or even a commodity? Or is it something that transcends all of those? In Real Religion, How to Avoid False Faith and Worship God in Spirit and Truth, Father Jeff Kirby cuts through the misguided modern notions about God and religion and takes you back to the foundation for true worship, God's revelation about himself. From his first contact with his chosen people to the culmination of his revelation in Jesus Christ, God shows us what religion is supposed to be like and how to make the practice of it a lifelong virtue in our lives. Order your copy of Real Religion by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tomorrow on More to Life, negativity.
The antidote for negativity isn't what you think. We'll help you discover the real path for a more hopeful, happy life.
That's tomorrow on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your guest today. Our host is Joe Heschmeyer, Catholic Answers' newest apologist, although a long time and very, very high level apologist. Glad to have you. Thank you for doing this, Joe.
I'm really glad to be hosting today. It's fun kind of switching the roles up.
It's hard to talk at all without saying the number constantly because I'm so used to going 888-318-7884.
That was a really subtle way of throwing in that if people want to call,
they can
the
call
number
what?
They should dial is 888-318-7884.
I say it more like this, 888-318-7884. But you did good.
This is like one of those terrible commercials you turn off where you're just like, yeah, said it three
please
times.
Stop it. Yeah, right.
So I actually want to talk to you a little bit about the book while we wait for the next call. That there's a line in here where you talk about Jesus as an expected life. So the thing that struck me about it is simply this. Like, you have a book about Jesus being really shocking, about Jesus being a teacher of strange things. You have a book that's all about how Jesus isn't kind of what you would anticipate or assume.
Yeah.
And then you've got a chapter on an expected life.
Yes.
It feels a little incongruous.
Well, now you tell me. The book is already in print, Joe. I mean, come on. All right. So, yes, it is incongruous. I mean, this is the life of Jesus is mysterious and full of twists and things that we have to meditate on to truly understand. I remember a few years ago, I remember when people started saying, what would Jesus do as the thing?
I like that you said that was a few years ago. That was like a few decades ago.
Was it really?
It's like the 90s.
I am so old, Joe. Please buy this book so I can retire. Okay, so what would Jesus do is beautiful. It's a beautiful question, but it's also, to a certain degree, a bit presumptuous. Like, Jesus tells you what he does, and he's not like a machine for giving easy answers. You have to meditate on Jesus. There's not like a snap, like, that's what he does, and then now you do it. So in some ways, we've got to be careful of the what would Jesus do mentality, because he requires thought from us. He requires that we put our intellect into it and reason out what he's doing and what he asks of us to do. So part of that is these seemingly incongruous things, because he is very strange, utterly unexpected, but also expected for centuries. Now, I don't know, you're a great apologist. When would you say the book of Isaiah was written? I mean, the prophecies in Isaiah.
There's big debates about the beginning of Isaiah.
So at least somewhere between 700 and 500.
Yeah,
I put in the book at least before 500, because, but yet you could read many passages of Isaiah, and people do this actually. They think they're reading the New Testament because it's such clear, like, reference to Jesus that you're like, well, how did he know? Because hundreds of years, even more than 1,000 years, and even in certain senses, thousands of years of preparing the world for Jesus. So that chapter that I wrote on that he lived an expected life is about that he was expected by the Jewish people. I didn't get anything in there about how it's also weird that he was expected by the pagan people in some way. There's certain pagan references that seem to be references to the coming of Jesus, but in a very obvious way, the entire history of the Jewish people is a history that builds up an expectation. And that expectation is implicit in their story. That is, when they tell the story of Adam and Eve and the fall of man and God's response to the fall of humanity, you know that God is doing something, and this all has a point. It's getting somewhere. It's not like the pagan world where you go, same thing today as it was yesterday. Try to get the gods not to destroy us. You know, like that's basically how pagan religion works, you know. But no, the Jewish religion is a religion with a trajectory. It's going somewhere. So the expectation is that God will triumph. Mixed in with this are all these promises that God makes all the way from the time of Moses, 1,250 years before Jesus, probably 1,250 years before Jesus, the promise of, I'll raise up a prophet like you. And then at 1,000 years before Jesus, a promise to David, I'll make your kingdom an everlasting kingdom. And then all these covenants that seem to be progressive covenants, including with Jeremiah, you know, where now I'm going to get my prophets wrong, and you'll have to correct me if I, Ezekiel, I'll take your heart of stone and make it a heart of flesh, the prophet Ezekiel, not Jeremiah, but certainly even with Jeremiah, I have a plan for you, you know, just the idea that God has a plan for Jeremiah, but that also means the wider you, all of you Jewish people, I have a plan. What that means, the wider you, I have a plan for you, the human race as well. So there's this great expectation. They know who's coming. It's going to be a king in the Davidic kingdom. It's going to be a prophet like Moses. And then all these other things. They know who to expect. And so John the Baptist says, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect another? There's a lot in that question. Yes. Like, are you the fulfillment of the entire history of the Jewish people and the expectation of humanity since the fall, or should we expect someone else to do that job? And then, of course, Jesus responds by giving his description of himself as a messianic figure, which is a way of saying yes without, again, getting yourself killed.
Yeah, I think that's really brilliant. So in the one sense, it's like there's this entirely long list. And occasionally you'll even see Christians put together a list of messianic expectations or prophecies. But one of the things I like about kind of the way you've got the book set up is it shows Jesus answers this, but with a twist. It isn't like paint by numbers. It isn't like you could just take the Old Testament prophecies and guess the life and ministry of Jesus.
You would not, as a matter of fact. You would not. I don't think that there's even Isaiah himself guessed at what he was, because you have I mean, you have the suffering servant,
yeah,
and you have the glorious Messiah. Are they the same person? Are they not the same person? How could that possibly be that it's this guy, but it's also this guy? And only in Jesus do we see all of this prophecy makes a unified sense. As a matter of fact, in John Bergsma's book on the Dead Sea Scrolls, he talks about how a good number of Jews were expecting more than one Messiah, because it's like, well, how are we going to make this all fit together? There's got to be more than one of these messiahs. But it's one of those things where you go, I don't know how that all adds up. And then you see Jesus and it's like, click, it just clicks into place. Oh, that's what all of this messianic prophecy is about.
Yeah, that makes a lot of, I think you see it in a concrete way with the gifts of the Magi. Because when you go back and read like Isaiah and you go back and read the Psalms, there's this promise of a figure to come who the kings will bring gold to, and then eventually frankincense is mentioned. Now, gold is what you give a king. Frankincense is an incense to God. When the Magi show up, it's like, but wait,
what's
there's
with the myrrh.
Yeah,
what's with the myrrh? Burial spices, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, we got a funeral plot for your kid. You know, like, that's not a normal gift to give a baby.
That's funny. We got, hey, what'd you get the baby for? Well, we got a grave site for the baby.
Yeah, you can tell the men did the shopping on this one.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, Joe. Are there calls?
There are calls. Let's, as much fun as it is to talk to you, let's go to the calls. 888-318-7884.
Let's go to Christy in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on 96.7 KHOJ. You see, that's why I have to go to the calls and you can't. I mean, could you have done that?
That's a good point.
That was such a good read. KHOJ. I'm sorry. Sorry, Christy, to keep you waiting just so I could laud my skills. Go ahead, Christy, with your question.
Yeah, I was wondering, in writing your book, what did you find that was the strangest teaching of Jesus?
The sixth chapter of John's Gospel. It's the strangest, possibly the strangest set of things any human being ever said. If it was anyone else who said what Jesus says in the sixth chapter of John's Gospel, we would not think well of that person. We would think ill of that person. The only reason Jesus can get away with saying all that stuff in the sixth chapter of John's Gospel is he is God, the Son of the living God, the Messiah, and he can do it. When he says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you shall not have life within you, that is shocking. That is, if Joe said that to me, I would say, Joe, it's been great working with you. And then I would refer him to a psychiatrist, because that is the most shocking set of words that I think you can, eat me and drink me. That's what he's saying. That is so strange. And the fact that we have a whole kind of strand of modern Christianity that does everything it can to take the strangeness out of that is a bad sign. But that for 2,000 years, bishops, priests, New Testament writers, and apostles have had to stress to us, this is serious business. Do not try to get around this. Do not try to act like this is a metaphor. Jesus said, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will not have life within you. That is irreducibly strange. Was that a clear enough answer, Christy?
Yeah. How do you think we can get the other people to get on board with that?
Live it. Keep inviting. Keep sharing that. I think I have had conversations myself with folks who were raised, for example, I'm thinking of one young woman raised in a non-denominational, what do you call them, like a mega church. And I said, she wanted to talk about why I would be Catholic. And I said, well, try the sixth chapter of John's Gospel. And she read it and she said, I never even heard that. I'd never heard that. And I was like, yeah, that's something, isn't it? And so I think we need to keep having those conversations. I think we, Catholic Answers, we do apologetics where we explain that and defend that. And Joe, if a real sola fide Protestant brother or sister were to, and they are our brothers and sisters, we are all brothers and sisters in the baptism of the Lord. But if they were to call right now, Joe could defend that better than I can defend it. What I can do is I can say, this is shocking. And if you are not shocked by this when you read it, read it again, because it is really shocking.
All right, sounds great.
Well, Cindy, God bless you. I think we're going to give you a book, too. Can we give her a book,
I think
too?
It's Christy.
Christy, you're I'm doing a terrible job today. Well, you know what? I'm acting like that's a new thing that I'm doing a terrible job. That's pretty common for me, Joe.
He reads the first letter of the name and then just guesses what a name
well,
might
I
be.
Have a lot on my mind today. I do have a lot of my, if you two could tolerate that.
Hey, Christy, if you want to stay on the line, we can get you a book by Ty Cobb Kellett?
Yeah, Ty. If that's Ty Kellett in Happy... thanks so much, Christy, for the call. Would you give out the number again, and I'll do the ad?
Yeah, 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884.
Now, there won't be any mistakes in the ad because it has to do with me. This is what we call the self-centered Christianity. Hey, you can get the book we're talking about, my new book, A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, Why, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him, at shop.catholic.com at 25% off for the rest of today. And I'm pretty sure that Carrie will let it go until tomorrow, too, because some people hear the podcast later. So you got like 24 to 48 hours to use this promo code, Teach Me, at shop.catholic.com. You get 25% off my new book, which is meant to do a very simple thing, made complicated by the entire modern world, but a very simple thing, introduce people to the person of Jesus. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Others that I would say definitely made an impact now is EWTN, and I go and walk at the park every day at lunch listening to you guys and being able to learn a lot more about the faith, learn a lot of other perspectives that I may have not have thought about. So I just want to thank y'all for being a big influence.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Back to Catholic Answers Live. I am your guest host for today's episode, Joe Heschmeyer, and I'm joined by my guest, the usual host of the show, Cy Kellett, who has a new book out called A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. The number, if you want to call in, is 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. So if you want to ask Cy a question about Jesus, about the new book, or just about how to share Jesus and the faith with other people, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Cy, thanks a lot for coming to your own show.
It was hard to walk across the hall and get here, Joe, but I'm really glad to be here with you. I'm glad I made the effort.
So we actually have a question that is off air, but I wanted to go ahead and share it because it seems like pretty directly relevant. Someone asked, can I get a recommendation on a book for a young 20-year-old woman who is baptized but not raised in the faith?
Well, yes, and I'm very grateful for that question, and that's what I was referring to earlier, is because we get these questions that I think here at Catholic Answers we have for several years been trying to fill that need. And it's a greater and greater need, Joe, because, you know, the unchurched person is more common than maybe since the beginning of this republic, maybe before, I don't know. The person who is raised and really doesn't know anything about Christianity, they don't know when Jesus lived, who Jesus was, what are the basic biographical facts. They know about jokes that are made about Jesus on TV or, you know, but they don't have the basic structure. So I think that's what we've been trying to do here at Catholic Answers. So to this person who chose to not give their question on the air, I just want to say Trent Horn kind of started that series of books, and I will highly recommend Why We're Catholic. Very fine book to just put in the hands of this person who has been baptized but doesn't know the faith. I'd also recommend Jimmy's book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. It's in the same kind of thematic. Here's a basic introduction to things you should know if you want to live the Christian life, in that case, about scripture. And I hope that my book would also do that job as an introduction to the person of Jesus. So I would recommend those three books. I think that your question, or your caller who decided to not speak on the air, is related to a need that more and more of us are realizing is out there. And I think Catholic Answers has realized it. And that's why these books are there. Why We're Catholic from Trent Horn, The Bible is a Catholic Book from Jimmy Akin, or this book, A Teacher of Strange Things, which is a basic introduction to the person of Jesus.
Great. I think it makes for an effective 1-2 punch if you give them the book and then sit down and maybe talk with them afterwards too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I mean, that's my plan with my children.
So like, they'll read the book and be like, Dad, they let you publish this?
No, they're not going to say that. Getting them to read it, I'm so happy that I'm their father because they have to read it. You know, like you can't get away with not reading your dad's book. I don't think you can get away with that.
Yeah, I certainly hope that's the case.
Yeah, we'll find out.
If it sells a lot of copies, that'll put more pressure on size kids. So if you need one more reason to go to shop.catholic.com and pick up a copy of the book.
Yeah, if it's a bestseller by their dad, they'll definitely have to read it.
Excellent. Well, let's take a few more calls. So Jim in Indianapolis, listening by EWNT.
I think what that's supposed to say is he's listening on EWTN.
Maybe.
thank you for reading so slavishly to the text. Ron, what's his name? Ron Burgundy.
I'm Ron Burgundy? Yes. I'll read whatever is on the prompter.
Thank you for doing that. That was the best reading of EWNT that I have ever heard. You said his name right, Jim, the caller?
I did say Jim. I was so convicted that I had to get the name right that it went totally downhill from there.
Jim, we're happy to have you. Go ahead with your question.
Just stay classy, San Diego.
There you go,
we're
Jim.
Even in the right city for that.
My question is, what did Jesus say about, or where did the process of annulment come from in the Catholic Church, and what did Jesus say, if anything, to support that procedure?
And I like the way that you asked the question, because many people are trying to get out of marriage when they ask this question. It's obvious that you know Jesus is teaching on marriage, which is a marriage cannot be dissolved, that no person, no earthly authority can dissolve what God has joined. So you're obviously starting from that premise. So where does the Catholic Church get the annulment teaching? And I'm going to connect the dots for you, and I'm working with Annette, though. Joe Heschmeyer is here to help me if I get this wrong. The teaching against divorce is clear in all of the Gospels. In Matthew's Gospel, there's a slight alteration in which he says, except in a case of porneia. And then, so there's a discussion about what does porneia mean. The idea is, or the way that Christianity has always understood the Gospels, is that Christ's words are there in the Gospels. Those words are given to the church to unpack over time. And so the church has the job of understanding, not me, not you, not individuals, the church that he founded has the job of unpacking those words over time. And this is part of the strangeness of Jesus as well, is that he has called other people to have responsibility in his own personal mission given to him by the Father. It's the truth. He did do that. And so the way that the church understands the exception that's given only in Matthew's gospel is that what Matthew is saying is, and this clearly comes from Matthew, who is an apostle himself, he knows what Jesus said, that Jesus didn't think that every marriage is automatically a valid marriage, that Jesus had an understanding that there could be things that could get in the way of a valid marriage. Among them would be porneia, which means some kind of sexual immorality. The most obvious kind of sexual immorality that would make marriage impossible would be incest. And that would fall under the category of porneia. And Jesus, in the time of Jesus, consanguinity was actually an actual problem that he and John the Baptist had to deal with because of Herod's consanguinity. So that's not quite incest, but it's very close. But so other things, sexual morality that makes the marriage impossible, that's where the annulment process comes from. So we take both the exception given in Matthew's gospel, the only gospel that gives an exception, unless Joe corrects me on this, and then the church tells us, what did Matthew mean by that exception? Would you say that answer was a fair answer, Joe?
Yeah, I want to build on that, but I want to really applaud that for being a very clear answer. Like I just said, there are parallel accounts. So for instance, in Mark 10, Jesus says that that if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. He also says whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. There's no exception clause. There's no, unless you really have a good reason. Divorce and remarriage is just absolutely prohibited. And when we're talking about Jesus as a teacher of strange things, this really is one of those areas, because the Mosaic law permitted divorce. The entire dispute at the time in the first century was based on the wording in the Torah, whether it had to be something very serious or whether you could divorce your wife and remarry for a trivial reason. So some of the rabbinical commentaries even suggest if she's a bad cook, you can divorce her and marry someone else. And so the question is that a big enough reason? And Jesus' response isn't to say little reason, big reason. He says no reason. He says you just can't do it. And so that is a shocking teaching. So the important thing there is in Matthew's version, there is this except for cause of porneia, which a lot of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and even some of our Orthodox brothers and sisters, have read as just contradicting Mark and Luke's account to suggest an exception for like adultery or something like that. But that misses the whole Jewish backdrop, right? Like Leviticus 18 has a whole list of rules about the kind of relationships you can't get into, the kind of things that a marriage isn't made of. And in the Greek version of Leviticus, those are referred to as porneia, and it's things like incest. So the question I think to pose to a modern Christian is, let's say you get a couple, like a couple who are in a gay marriage, and they convert to Christianity, and they want to know, well, are we allowed to get divorced? And the answer is, of course, because you never were married in the eyes of God. Like the critical underlying thing throughout all of this is when Jesus says, what God has joined together, man may not separate. So it's the whole porneia question is, did God join it together? And the church, as I said, needs some way of figuring out that question to the best of an earthly understanding. And so that's where annulments come from.
Yeah. Jim, I'm going to say thanks. If you hang on the line, we'll send you a copy of A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him, which I'm very happy to say is out today. It's my new book here at Catholic Answers Press, and I hope you'll read it. I hope you, when you get it, you'll read it. Thanks. Should I go to another call?
Yeah, I think we got time to do one more call. Do you think?
All right. I'll go to Ed in Toledo, Ohio, listening on Annunciation. I see your face. I'm not going to read the misspelling, Joe. All right? That's Toledo, Ohio. There is no Toledo, Ohio. I'm fairly certain. Ed in Toledo, Ohio, listening on Annunciation Radio. Go ahead with your question, please.
First, I'm a big fan of EWTN and Annunciation Radio and of all the guests on all the hosts on Annunciation Radio. And Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you.
My question is, Jesus' persona of the God of love, God of truth, God of justice, God of mercy, which transcends time and space and all situations, would be transcendent in the Eucharist. And so the persona has a larger transcending situation. Does that mean that when Protestants partake in, say, a scripture study, are they partaking in the reality of Jesus when they don't have the body, they don't have the body and blood
Yeah, right. They're not physically eating the body and blood of the Lord. The answer is yes. I'm going to get into more detail. When you do have a scripture study, you are participating in, and as Jesus has called us, into the inner life of the Trinity. But I got to explain more of that on the other side. So we'll have to wait. I didn't do the clock right. I apologize, Joe. Messed you up on your first time hosting.
I'm totally new to this.
Can you hang on a few minutes, Ed?
Sure.
888-318-7884, our number, 888-318-7884. You want to talk about Jesus? You want to talk about my new book, A Teacher of Strange Things? Or you just want to talk about sharing Jesus and how we do it? You're welcome to call 888-318-7884.